This is Rabbi Josh Yoder of the Stanton Street Shul. Thank you for downloading this class podcast. These classes are provided free of charge through the generosity of the Stanton Street Shul community and supporters like you. If you do enjoy them, please consider making a donation to our synagogue's building fund on our website's shop donate page at www.stantonstshul.com.
Good evening. It is Wednesday, December 11th, 2013. Back after a two-week break, I guess, from current Jewish questions, and we're going to finish off this section on electricity and Jewish law today, and wanted to go past the pure laws of Shabbat, which has kind of been the focus for the previous few weeks. So if you haven't been here for the previous few weeks or haven't followed, don't worry, because this has nothing to do with it. I mean, a little. We talk a bit about Shabbat and Haftalah, but not because of, you know, is electricity fire in terms of are you breaking Shabbat, but there are other elements of Jewish law, no pun intended there, and other aspects of Jewish law, where electricity is going to have to, you know, take a role. So today we're going to discuss things like Shabbat candles, we're going to discuss Havdalah, we're going to discuss Hanukkah, which we discussed a bit in Shul, Bidikat Chametz and Matzah. All of these areas are questions of electricity that are going to come in. You know, for some of them, the question of is electricity fire are also incredibly relevant. Right? So it goes beyond just the pure laws of Shabbat. Right? Now, if you're going to say electricity, and again, let's also refine the terms a bit. When we talk about things with electricity, we could be talking about the actual electrons going through the wire, or what is it that you're trying to do with that electricity, meaning turning on a light bulb. And even if you are talking about just the end result, meaning not the transfer of current, but what you do with that current, we discuss the differences between the incandescent light bulb and the filament versus, say, a fluorescent light bulb, which excites particles and whatnot, or the LED light bulb that doesn't do either one. Right. So when we talk about, like, is a light bulb going to count for fire, we're focusing specifically on the incandescent ones. Because for the other ones, it certainly isn't, because there's nothing even close. With the incandescent light bulb, we saw a bunch of different ways. Maybe it could be, maybe it couldn't be. But let's see what those other ramifications are. So the first one we'll discuss is lighting Shabbat candles. If electricity is fire, then, in theory, shouldn't you be allowed to light Shabbat candles? Risa, start us off. This is Rambam Hilchot Shabbat 5:1.
The lighting of the Shabbat candles is not optional if someone wants to light or not. And it's not a mitzvah that one does not need to run afterwards to do, such as a Reuven or washing one's hands to eat, but rather it is an obligation.
Yeah, so just to point out here, according to Rambam, and it's nice that he threw this in here, remember we spoke about Erevin. Erevin, he says, there's no intrinsic obligation that you need to run afterwards to set one up. Lucky for us. Even though it was clearly a good thing, look back to those shiurim. Or even washing your hands to eat. Anyone know what that's about? You all wash your hands, like, before you eat bread, right? And stuff like that. So, technically speaking, you know, even though we say bracha over it, you have a greater chiyuv to do mayim achronim, to wash your hands afterwards, than to wash before. And he's saying that even for, you know, lighting Shabbat candles is more important in the grand halachic scheme. Like, if you could sort of, like, set up a hierarchy, lighting Shabbat candles more important than washing before a meal. So, yeah.
And men and women are obligated to have in their house a light for Shabbat, even if one does not have
what to eat.
One asks by the openings and takes oil and lights the candle for the sake of Oneg Shabbat, and one must make the blessing to light the Shabbat candles, as one makes a blessing on everything that one is rabbinically obligated.
All right, so you even have to, like, you know, ask, you know, to borrow for it just for the sake of Oneg Shabbat. Shalamis, here's Yechavedah. This is Rav Avadi Yosef.
Question, does one fulfill one's obligation to light Shabbos candles with electric lights, or must it be done specifically with oil or wax? In summary, in circumstances where it's possible to get oil or wax candles, it is certainly better to fulfill one's obligation with them for lighting Shabbos and Yom Kippur candles, since there is a special recognition that they are lit for the sake of Shabbos and Yom Tov, and it is proper to intend when one says the blessing before one lights to exempt with the blessing the electric lights that one may light afterwards. And in any event, when it is impossible to obtain oil or wax candles, it is possible to bless and light on electric lights and to perform one's obligations.
So here you go. According to Rav Ovadia Yosef, at least, you can fulfill your obligation for Shabbat candles with electric lights. And again, by which I mean specifically the incandescent, at least. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it certainly would show. I mean, you know, you can't necessarily, might be a little bit of a leap, but it would seem to show that he's assuming that the light bulb or the incandescent light bulb is some form of fire, I would think, if you're able to make a bracha on it for lighting with it. So it would seem to have some kind of fire.
Well, so I only pulled out here where it says Bisikum. That's the last paragraph. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes Rav Ovadia Yosef, the way he writes in Yechaveh Da'at, which are very easy to read responsa, because this was based off of his radio show. All right, he'll go through a whole lot of sources one way, usually a whole lot of sources the other way. One of the most comprehensive you're ever going to find, because he doesn't quote the Ashkenazim ones, he also quotes the Sephardi ones. I should say he doesn't only quote the Ashkenazim ones. He really quotes everyone. And often, like, there's a machloket. So I just wanted to, you know, pull out here the Sikkum as the summary. Mm-hmm. So even without going through the rest of the tshuva, right, you can say, one, pure obvious, he holds that an incandescent bulb is considered fire, and therefore it's okay. Right? Certainly plausible. Like, there's another possibility in terms of extension here, that you can give a decent halachic reasoning without resorting to the fact that it is fire. How so? Because the point of lighting candles is for Oneg Shabbat. It's to make Shabbat better. How do you accomplish that? By having light in your house. Meaning, at the time that the takana was mentioned, in terms of there being any other alternatives of lighting other than candles, no longer existed. You could make a halachic argument that since today, you can accomplish the same goal of light through other means aside from candles that you would otherwise, you know, be able to do with candles. Right, that didn't quite make sense. Since the whole point is to have light in the house, have light in the house any, through any means necessary. Why does it specifically have to be with candles or oil? Well, because that's all they had for, you know, quite a few generations. In fact, most of Jewish history did not have electricity, right? So you can give a plausible argument that way, but Ovadia Yosef seems to believe that it is, in fact, considered like fire, all right? Now, again, this is only, you would have to have either, again, the assumption that it's fire or the assumption that it was the intent. You could certainly understand why others would disagree with it, right? Mm-hmm. But if you do think it's fire, then a better question would be, why would you not fulfill your obligation? Meaning, if an incandescent light bulb isn't fire, you've got a very simple answer. Why can't you fulfill your obligation? Because you're told to light a ner. That mm-hmm. was the takana. That was the decree. This is not a decree that you're not fulfilling the exact decree. So it shouldn't work, right? The only way you could get around that is to say, well, you're fulfilling the intent of the law, if not the letter of the law, but that's a separate halachic argument discussion that, you know, we're not going to distribute one, you know, we're not going to, you know, conclude one way or the other here. But if you do think it's fire, right, then why wouldn't you be able to use a Shabbat, why wouldn't you be able to use an incandescent light bulb for Shabbat? That would be the other way of framing the question. So for Rav Ovadia Yosef, at least, yeah, sure, go ahead, right? And for those who disagree and want to maintain that it's still fire, you would have to ask that question, why do you make that particular distinction? If this is considered a ner, right, if this is considered a flame, it should work, mm-hmm. all right? Mark, let's then look at the other end about Havdalah. I'll see, this is where it gets interesting. So, first Shulchan Aruch, Or HaChaim, 298.15 for basic laws.
If a candle is in an enclosure or mirror and one sees the fire but does not use the light, or one uses the light but does not see the flame, one does not make a blessing for Havdalah until one sees the flame and moves the fire.
Okay, Josh, Mishpatei Uziel.
And this is the law regarding electric lights, that its primary light comes from the metal bow connection. And since the light is found continuously in the electric current, and we are prohibited from holding the wick, this is in category of a Shabbat candle, and we make the blessing of it even after Yom Kippur. This is the letter of the law, but in practice, it is a superior performance of the commandment to use a wax candle.
Okay. Now, while I take the Yabia Omer.
Me?
Yes. Yabia Omer is also Rav Avadji Yosef. If anyone knows, those two major works of his were based off of a verse that we say in Pesukei Dezimra on Shabbat, Yom Yom Yabia Omer V'Laila Laila Yechaveh Da'at. Yabia Omer was huge, real volume. Yechaveh Da'at was a little bit smaller in the radio show. Anyway, there you go. Continue.
Regarding the electric light, we do not make a blessing over it for Havdalah because of the glass enclosure, which is an interruption. And this is the letter of the law, for it is the general rule in our hands that in the cases of doubt regarding blessings, we are lenient, i.e., we don't say the blessing.
So here we have a bit of a dispute. According to Ben Sion Uziel, it seems to be that it is, in fact, fire. All right? But according to Ravadi Yosef, he, which we said before, even though he says that it's fire, based on the ruling of the Shulchan Aruch, which we saw earlier, says, yeah, it might be fire, but there's a special law by Havdalah, which is, when you make Havdalah on something, you have to see the flame directly, not through any intermediary. Now, if you take off the glass enclosure of an incandescent bulb, it's not going to last very long, right? Bam. So you can only see the light through an incandescent bulb through the glass. So according to Rav Avadji Yosef, even though that the light bulb, the incandescent light bulb, counts as fire, because of the glass enclosure, you can't use it for Havdalah. But for Shabbat candles, you don't have that same type of requirement. You don't have that invalidation thing. And you might be able to argue that it's because, since the whole point with Shabbat candles is you get some light, so you can see, you can have your Shabbat dinner. It doesn't matter that there's some interruption. Like, you put a lampshade over it. Like, you're still getting light, right? But for Havdalah, there's a special halacha. So just because it's fire, according to Ravad Yosef, doesn't mean that it works clear in all other cases. Mm-hmm. Now, here's another great halacha, which I think I quoted in Shul a few weeks ago. This is from the Tzitz Eliezer regarding laws of Hanukkah, which we just had. This is in Tzitz Eliezer 120, chapter 12. So, however, the doubt I have in this case is what I hinted to in the end of the previous chapter, and here regarding Hanukkah, there is an additional point with which to be strict, and that is perhaps the incandescent light is considered a torch, an avukah. Since most of the menorot appear that the light continues in a circle, that it has several wicks, but the electric light is not, it should be lit straight with one string, rather it is lit from the round, and there is room to question that this is like a torch and it requires further study. Let me explain. A Havdalah candle is supposed to be an avukah, by definition. It's supposed to have more than one wick. It's why if people just have two candles, when they say before they say Borei Me'arei Ha'esh, they'll put two separate candles together. It's why, when sometimes it takes a while to light, people insist on waiting until you don't just have one thing lit, but you've got two wicks and a Havdalah candle lit. That's an avukah. That's considered a halachic torch. Hanukkah candles cannot be an avukah. What is a requirement for Havdalah is a disqualification for Hanukkah candles. Okay? Now, the Tzitz Eliezer, he gives what I think is a fascinating approach. He says the problem that he may have with Hanukkah candles using electricity for Hanukkah candles is really the shape of the filament. Here's why. If anyone sees like the small bulbs, actually, hold on, let me get one from the back and we'll pass it around. Okay. So, we got some visual aids from the small light bulbs in the back. These are the specific light bulbs that the glass enclosure is kind of shaped like a candle. Very common in Hanukkah candles. Notice the shape of the filament, right? It's not a straight line. It's kind of arced in the middle. So the argument that the Tzitz Eliezer is giving is that since the light source isn't really coming from one thing straight up, but rather from this little arced thingy, it's almost like a round thing, it's no longer a ner. It's no longer a candle, but more like an avukah. Furthermore, look at it really, really carefully. And you'll notice that that little filament wire isn't straight. It's coiled. So you could argue that even if it's flat, right, such that it doesn't really hook in the middle, that because of those coils, it looks like more of a torch than a nair. Because you don't really have just one thing. You've got lots of things, right, that are sort of coming together, even though you could argue they're not actually in contact with each other. But still, I find it a fascinating halachic argument, right? Because of the shape of that filament in the middle, it's no longer a halachic candle, but it could be a halachic torch. In fairness, the Tzitz Eliezer does not say explicitly that he is. He does say tzarich iyun. It requires further study. All right? So here would be a reason why, even if you want to assume that an incandescent light bulb is considered like fire, still can't use it for Hanukkah candles. Having nothing to do with the question of fire as much as having to do with the question of how do we use our light bulbs. In theory, if you could construct some electric light bulb that would not only have the components of fire, but somehow be done with a very straight rod, or meaning something straight without being coiled, it would be interesting to think about if the Tzitz Eliezer would say in that specific case it's okay. But for all intents and purposes, he was dealing with what he had available, right? And I don't think, these light bulbs changed too much, the past few decades. Mm-hmm. All right? Mm-hmm. Now, another interesting question comes up with Bedikat Chametz, right? Risa, take Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim 4331.
The lighting requires a candle and not the light of the moon. If one did not check on the night of the 14th, and one checks on the day of the 14th, one does not check by the light of the sun, but by the light of a candle. But for a porch which has abundant light, if someone checked with sunlight, it is sufficient. And this is the law regarding a stack, skylight in a room.
So, you probably are aware of this halacha. When you check for chametz, you're supposed to check specifically with a candle, not relying on external sources of light. This is partially based on a verse, V'haya be'eta hiyacha peset Yerushalayim b'neirot, that when God comes down to, check the world, check Jerusalem for the wicked people, he comes down with fire, specifically with the ner. But, as you could probably imagine, if we actually implemented this, we could, in fact, have some problems, or at least do your bi'ur chametz when you do your bidikat chametz, but as you're burning your chametz, you're also burning the rest of your apartment. Shlamis, take Yechavadat. This is Rav Avad Yosef again.
Question. It is possible to fulfill...
Is it possible?
Is it possible to fulfill the obligation of checking for planets with a flashlight, or must it be done with a wax candle or something similar?
All right, and I skip most of the, logic back and forth. Skip to the answer part, and therefore...
And therefore, although the ideal, optimal performance of the commandment is to check with a wax candle... However, in times of need where it is difficult to obtain a wax candle, it is possible to commit performing checking for chametz with a blessing using a flashlight.
Yeah, and I'm sure most of you are very relieved to hear this, right? And you could imagine, why this is a very important halacha. You simply don't want to have people checking under the beds with fire. That's really stupid. There are also ways of... avoiding this problem altogether, mind you, being where you check certain things and not others. And that is, you have an obligation to check your house for chametz the night before Pesach. But there are also rules in terms of what needs to get checked. So let's say you, like many normal people, I shouldn't say normal people considering when it comes to Pesach, like many Jews, that's a better way of putting it, you probably do your Pesach cleaning before Pesach. If anyone has kids, right, at least when I was growing up, my mom would do a Pesach cleaning and said, technically speaking, the rule was no food anywhere, But really, there was, I mean, you know, super rule, after certain places were cleaned, no food past this point coming Pesach. She might let it slide other parts of the year. You don't mess with moms right before Pesach. Really bad, bad news. Right? So once you have, you know, it's all clean for Pesach, you know that there's no chametz there, and you know no chametz was brought there, well then, that's not a place you'd really have to check. So if you cleaned your bed beforehand, you know there's no chametz there, you know no chametz was brought there, you're hopefully not worried about rats who got into your closet and brought it under your bed. If you are, you have other issues too, right? So that being the case, you wouldn't have to. But that aside, you really want to give the entire house a once-over. According to Ravadi Yosef, you can use a flashlight. You should be very grateful that he holds this way. Right? And you can argue again two ways. Either one, it's because it still has the halachic definition of a candle, although he says it still is preferable. Right? If it's really identical, right, then it shouldn't matter. The fact that, you know, the Torah, you know, the Gemara, I should say, you know, says you do it with a ner, you do it with an actual candle, means you ideally do it exactly the way that the Talmud says it is. If it's really interchangeable, meaning such that it's fire, it has a din, has a halachic, the halachic definition of a ner, then it shouldn't matter. So even though he does seem to treat it as fire, there still is a preference to do it in the quote-unquote traditional way. Right? Something to keep in mind, that even for Avadi Yosef, it still is better to do it more authentically in the way it was initially stated. All right, Mark, take us next question with matzah.
The matzah cannot be kneaded or cooked by a non-Jew or a deaf mute, a fool, or a minor.
Right, so there are certain laws about the baking of matzah. It has to be done. Has anyone been to a matzah factory?
No. I was in elementary school.
All right, do you remember them saying anything when you were there?
Saying anything?
Yeah. Wow. Well, when you that's a good point. Go to a matzah baking factory, or at least by which I mean the handmade matzah factory. If anyone's down, by the way, y'all live on the Lower East Side. You should see this at least once. When I take people on tours of the Lower East Side, try to pass by this. On Rivington, you still have the Streitz factory. Someone's doing a documentary on them. Me and Alyssa got interviewed for it, so we'll see whatever happens with that. But you walk by, you'll actually see matzo coming out of the machine, right, in giant sheets that get broken down and get put up in these little, you know, metal tray hanger things for packaging or whatnot. So that's just an aside. You're living on the Lower East Side. You got to check it out at least once because you're not going to see it so often. Let's go to a handmade baking factory. You're going to find a lot of women saying, L'shei matzah mitzvah, L'shei matzah mitzvah, right? Having to do it with intent. Because otherwise, like, why would you not be able to have, you know, well, you can say that can't be near cooked by a non-Jew, deaf, mute, or fool, or minor. Because maybe, you know, at least in the latter cases, deaf, mute, fool, or minor, chere, shoten, katan, are considered as lacking a certain degree of knowledge. But what about a non-Jew? Like, once a thing is baked, it's baked. Guys know what he's doing, know what he's doing. It's a matter of, you know, it should be, you know, shmur, but it has to be, you know, something about, you know, Lishma. We'll go through some of the details here. Also, Ravadi Yosef dealt with the question. Mark, start us off. This is Yechavadat 114.
Question. Is it possible to fulfill one's obligation to eat matzah on the first night of Passover with gada, shmura matzah, that was baked with electric machinery? Or must one obtain matzah which was done entirely by hand of people obligated in commandments?
So to explain a difference here, we use the idiom shmura matzah colloquially. And it usually refers to the handmade stuff because it's very rare that you find handmade matzah that isn't shmura. With the machine matzah, you can have machine regular and machine shmura. Shmura is a function of the grain. It's not a function of the baking process. Right? It means that no water came into contact with the grain even before it was ground into, you know, flour. That's what shmura is. Once you have that flour, you know, that's shmura flour. You take that flour, you make machine matzah out of it. It's the same shmura, right? So it's an important distinction there. Continue.
And because of this, it seems that one does not fulfill the obligation because the actions of kneading, arranging, and baking are all done automatically and not by the power of a Jew who is obligated in the commandments. And this is similar to having the matzah baked by a deaf, mute, fool, or minor who have no knowledge and are not obligated in the commandments.
Yeah, to the next paragraph.
Therefore, machine matzah is not considered any better than matzah which was made without any formal declaration of intent. And even the person who presses the button to operate the machine says, for the sake of the matzah mitzvah, does not work because his statement only applies to the first action in the process and does not extend to the subsequent actions in the cooking process.
Yeah, so how can it really be done l'shma if you're just, like, doing it once? So the theory is, well, what if you say l'shem matzah mitzvah and you push the button? Does that count? Rav Yosef says no. Because he says that only applies to the first action, but not to, like, every step of the process. You might even be able to argue that also might, at best, would apply to, say, the first batch, but not every other blast. Josh, take the next paragraph.
Okay. However, we find that many great sages write that pressing the button to start the machine, if done by a Jew who makes the formal declaration of intent, is considered as if the intent is for every action of the machine. And in an emergency, when one cannot find handmade matzah made by God-fearing Jews, it seems that there is on what to rely on the opinion that one fulfills the obligation with guarded machine matzah, even to say the blessing Asher Kedishanu al Achilat Matzah. And in any event, it is the ideal mitzvah to put in the effort to obtain handmade shmara matzah made by God-fearing Jews who are experts in Jewish law, so that one may fulfill one's obligation according to all opinions. However, for the rest of the holiday, even those who eat the handmade shmara may be lenient to eat machine matzah, which is kosher for Pesach.
All right, because to explain that last line first, the matzah that you have at the Seder night has additional, like, additional rules on it to be done specifically for the purpose of fulfilling your obligation, right? He's not saying that the machine matzah isn't kosher for Pesach, but you're talking about specifically having it at Leil HaSeder on Seder night and saying Al Achilat Matzah. A few other interesting facts here. Rav Tendler used to complain that the only time people eat Chametz Gamur, 100% chametz on Pesach, is when they eat the handmade shmura matzah. Why? Because his argument was, he got his matzah through a special run that he checked himself. He did not trust the handmakers one at all. And he said, well, basic rules of cooking. When you cook something at really high temperatures for a short period of time, doesn't get cooked all the way through if you cook it on slightly lower temperature for a slightly longer period of time. And the way that he describes setting up is, first they count the 18 minutes from as soon as water touches the flour. He said, well, that's wrong, because, and Gemara is also explicit on this, as long as you're kneading the dough, the 18-minute clock doesn't start, because it doesn't become chametz while it's in 18 months. But anyway, he would complain a lot about it, and he saw some crazy stuff there. My uncle went with him once, and he saw, he picked up handmade shmur, and it was, you know, being dried with fans. And once he picked it up, it, like, sort of doubled over because it wasn't really fully cooked. At least with the machine matzahs, you know that they're fully cooked every time. Mm-hmm. Given those two options, I mean, yeah, but I'm not going to apostle all handmade shmurim relating to what Rav Tendler used to say. But at any rate, he does say, lechatchila, given the option, handmade is better. Why? Because you avoid the question entirely of having the matzah being baked lishma when it was done through machines. Because, again, you check out a handmade matzah factory, you'll hear l'shem matzah mitzvah over and over and over again. You do it in Streitz, maybe you get it the first time. Right? I've never been there when they've opened. And I honestly don't know when they start. But anyway, you know, you don't hear it when it comes off, you know, the rack. Now, there were other reasons why people were very reluctant to permit machine matzah. For example, one factor was this was a huge source of income, particularly for immigrant women. And once you rely on machine matzah, like, you know, the Industrial Revolution, you put a lot of unskilled labor out of business. Not always a great thing, you know, depending on the economy. That aside, just because you got the machine, are you fulfilling the obligation? It's interesting. Rav Avadi Yosef doesn't, he seems not to like it, but he also doesn't want to say that the other people were wrong. Right? So he's like, well, enough other people say it's okay, so yeah, I'll go along with it if, you know, you can't do any better, but really do the handmade, because it avoids these problems. At any rate, you can see just how often these questions of electricity in Jewish law can come up beyond the technical definition of Shabbat to any question of automation, and in particular, if something can be done lishma. A regular argument I have with, some people, printed documents would be another example. You have electronic automation for it. Some people, when they get, say, ketubah, get it pretty much done already, right? And then you just fill in, which is the only parts that are necessary. That could apply to certain other documents, too. That there's a basic form. The form part can be, reprinted, right? The basic text and template, you fill in the names and the dates and locations, and poof, now you have it done lishma, like this is done specifically for that purpose. And again, it's a distinction between the tofes and the toreif, where one part has to be done lishma, the other part is the basic template that doesn't, right? So in question could be then, can you just have a printout? For ketubot, my father would always come to a wedding with his own printout of the ksuba, just in case there was a problem under the chuppah, right? He'd always have one of the sheet of paper. It's like, okay, problem there. Here, we'll use this one too, right, as a backup. So, there you go. So, matters of intent come up. We saw even if in the fire case, there are a lot of laws that don't just pertain to Shabbat regarding fire. By Shabbat, I mean Chilul Shabbat, desecrating Shabbat. You've got Shabbos candles, you've got Havdalah candles, and we saw Hanukkah candles too. I did get an interesting question. I should throw it here that we got. I'm not sure if anyone was here for that. Someone asked, even if you don't think that you're fulfilling the obligation for Shabbat with electric candles, can you still have one out? Meaning, let's say in your window, you've got your regular menorah, let's say you used one of those oil rigs, okay? You put up an oil thing. Can you also put up an electric menorah?
For decoration.
Yeah, decoration, or just put it in the window. Let's face it, barring a blackout, they're going to last longer than oil unless you really go overboard. That was an interesting question. I said, on one hand, you could argue, well, you're not making things worse. On the other hand, there is an argument I can give to not do it. Based on the Gemara and Shabbat, the Rava had an issue in a place called Mechoza. Not everyone there was so observant. And he issued a special decree that if you have a house that's on a corner, you had to light in windows on both sides of the corner, lest someone pass by and say, we don't hold, saying, oh, that person doesn't hold of Hanukkah. Because, not forget, Hanukkah is one of the few pure rabbinic holidays, right? No mention in the Torah, nor could there have been. So, given that there was already dissension or resentment against rabbinic authority, right? If you didn't have a menorah, it wasn't just, oh, you're not firm, you forgot. You're actually making a statement that you don't really care about the sages. Mm-hmm. You said, well, if you're on a corner, you have to go out of your way, lest someone make that claim. Today, you might be able to use that rationale to say, well, don't put up an electric one, lest either people think that it is permitted, or lest people think that this is how you fulfilled your obligation, unless you make some sort of change to it. I don't know. I'm sure you're going to have differences of opinion on that, too. But we'll let that slide. Any other questions on tonight or other things? Fantastic. Next, so there's not going to be Shira this Sunday, because I'm going to be speaking in Omaha, Nebraska, for the Shabbat. Yeah, that's going to be fun. And next Wednesday, by request, we're doing the class on gambling.
Yay.
All right?
That doesn't evolve from what happened here.
Oh, not in the least. We'll bring it up. The truth is, I had given the class on gambling before I even started recording the podcast, and I did it specifically on Hanukkah because it was, Inyan Adiyumah, because that's where the dreidel thing comes in. So it's also independently a very fun topic, which you come back next week, you'll see. All right. So next week we're going to discuss gambling and a whole bunch of ramifications. All right. Have a wonderful week.